Good afternoon, everyone. It is 2 o'clock on Thursday, May 15th, 2025, and I'd like to call the Ponsonby Town Council to order. I would ask everyone to please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let the record show that all council members are present and in chambers. Now, item 4, additions, corrections, or deletions to the agenda. Mike?
None from staff.
Anyone? Okay. I move to adopt the agenda as presented. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the agenda is adopted as presented. We are up to item 5, citizen participation, and this is your opportunity under our rules to come forward to the podium, speak on a matter that is not on the agenda, and you have the attention of the council members, our manager, and also the department heads. We express appreciation on behalf of the council and the government for you taking the time to come and let us know what is on your mind. If you have a question and we're able to answer it now, we will. But in the interest of accuracy, we may not be able to, and certainly something that you say you may see come back as an agenda item in the future. And as a reminder, the council members and staff are always available to you outside of a council meeting to speak with you. So I have as the first person who has provided us with our pink sheet is Marco Beck and Steve Wolf. Would you please come forward? Thank you.
Marco Beck, 4758 South Peninsula Drive.
Behind you, Steve Wolf, 91 Calumet Avenue.
Thanks for the time, Council. You're aware that we are in the process of constructing expansion to the Veterans Memorial. By Memorial Day, we should have the block up and ready. But I want to talk about something exciting for us, which is a new website that Steve took the lead on developing with a cohort of his. So I'm going to turn it over to Steve.
Thank you, Mark.
Okay. If you can see on the monitors there, we've been around for 15 years, our Ponce Inlet Veterans Memorial Association. And we finally have our own dedicated website. We'd been borrowing a page from the community center, and we're grateful for that support. But here's our new website. We can maybe just quickly, but if you go across the top, I think some of our goals for creating the site, one, just not only have a better presence online, but we are getting ready to kick off really a major campaign to expand the memorial. And we wanted a way for people to learn more about us, also to be able to donate to the project, things like that. Some of the things we want to do is just make sure this is a very simple, easy to navigate website. It's not complicated. It's short. Everything in there is pretty short and to the point. And I think the other thing that was important to us is that we reflect our community well with our online presence. So hopefully we're bringing some honor and credit not only to veterans who have served that reside here in Ponce Inlet and certainly served our nation, but that we're a great representative of this fantastic community that we all live in and enjoy being at. So if you go across the top, you can see there's our mission. I can't read it from here. There we go. Memorial, the history of our group, talk about the expansion project, how to become a member, who our board is, and then how to donate, and then how to honor somebody, like buy a plaque or a paver or something for the expansion. Now, if you scroll down the page a little bit, you'll find that you can get to those same things again. So there's two or three ways to get to everything. But if you click, if you would click on the left there where it says our mission and go down to the next one, you just see it's just very short, like just real quick bullet statements. It's a very clean, easy to use website. And then certainly if you get to honor someone, if you wouldn't mind going down to that one, then you just shows what we're trying to offer people for memorializing folks. And then there's the click here, the click. So that takes you to an order form online, and we've got everything set up with PayPal and all that. So That's kind of it in a nutshell. If you guys want to go look at it on your own time, it's PontsInletVeterans.org. We're getting also, you know, not only getting further along where we now have our own official website, but we've got a new email address set up tied to that domain name that we own, and then we're getting a permanent dedicated phone number as well. So it'd be much easier to communicate with us moving forward. And I guess with last thing I just want to say, I know I'm not the first, but I don't want to be the last of the veterans group to thank you, Mayor, and the council members and the city staff for all you do to support this memorial and to make it such a great destination and a great place in our community. We couldn't do what we're doing without your help, and especially the things we needed to go through to get the permits and everything for the expansion project. So we really are grateful, and you all are brought up in our meetings all the time about the great support that we get. And we appreciate you showing up for the Veterans Day and the upcoming Memorials Day. And I just want to put it out there for everybody, if you're not aware, we are having more of a major kickoff, almost kind of a shovel ceremony, if you will, to launch the expansion project on June 20th. And again, thank you for your support for that. And hopefully you all turn out for that and get behind this project. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Steve Field.
Steve Field, 6 Mars, Old North. At last month's meeting, we talked about increasing the number of pickleball courts and someone suggested we maybe build a new basketball court someplace else. But looking at the current basketball court, why don't we repurpose it to multi-use? I've checked with some of the neighbors. No one plays full court basketball there. The most I've ever been there is shooting at one basket, and it's like 3 or 4 people. So just by eyeballing it, it looks like you have the potential. Put up a net, put up some fence, maybe reline it, and just an idea. But the reason I'm up here today is, once again, property taxes. There was a very interesting article in the Orlando Sentinel on May the 8th, and I'd like to just highlight some of the things in the article. Central Florida county budgets have ballooned since 2020, fueled partly by rising property tax collections. Increases like those which are happening around the state have convinced Governor Ron DeSantis and some other Republicans the time is now to cut taxes. DeSantis is accusing local governments of massive expansion in their spending built on the back of struggling homeowners. There is no doubt the city and county spending has grown rapidly because of higher tax collections. The Sentinel analysis has said. I sent Mike, I think Mike has the article now also. Local officials argue bigger budgets cover rising costs due to inflation and growth, helping them do anything from building new roads or hiring new police officers. I don't believe we have the opportunity to build any new roads, so that's not something we do. Counties in this state have massive expansion of their budget in the last 5 or 6 years, and the reason is they're getting more revenue from the property tax. Like most other counties, Seminole County and Orange County have not increased their millage rates since 2006. State law requires cities and counties to disclose the so-called rollback rate or property tax rate if the government will collect the same amount of money in the prior year. So, the question to you guys, have you reviewed the emails between Ms. McCall, Mr. Disher, and myself?
Yes.
Yes.
Have you reviewed the audit results?
Yes.
Yes.
Did you know that the town's cash balance was higher by at least $1.5 million prior to voting to increase the millage rate last September?
Yes. Yes.
Wow. County level.
Wow. Okay. Did you? So just as a reminder, as I stated last time, 2.5%. That's the increase on the current year's Social Security. 3%, current year-over-year inflation. 17%, Ponce Inlet budget increase over prior year. $1.609 million cash on hand, higher than the previous year. So that's basically enough to cover, we had enough cash at the beginning of the year almost to cover a total year's budget. 54% the budget increase in the last 3 years in Ponce Inlet. I look forward to productive budget meetings to develop appropriate fiscal responsibility budget for the next fiscal year.
Thank you, Mr. Fields.
Can I have a comment here?
Yes.
Because there's two important numbers that seem to be ignored in these discussions. And the first one is 70%. 70% of our income comes from property taxes. 70%. So eliminate the property taxes and find out what happens to this town. That can't happen. The other number is 25%. Usually our taxes are 25 to 30% of the total tax bill. So when we're working on a small reduction, it's very tiny compared to the total tax bill. So some of your efforts, I think, should be in other big areas, because 70% of that tax bill we don't have any control over. So I would appreciate picking on them for a while.
I'm only addressing the Ponce Inlet budget. I'm not addressing the county budget or anything else. The Ponce Inlet budget has gone up 54% in the last 3 years. You agree?
Yeah.
We should address that. Let's worry about that. And I'm not sure how you handle the rest.
Thank you, Mr. Fields. Shannon White.
Shannon White, 39 Coastal Oak Circle, Ponce Inlet. I know that we recently, purchased a golf cart and e-bikes, and I'm a very active person, and I'd just like to know what our utilization of those new vehicles has been. I mean, I saw the bike being ridden for the second time today. I have not seen the golf cart out. And, I know it's not big money, but again, it all adds up over time. And, as we acquire things, we need a cost-benefit analysis understand, the real purpose, and is it serving the community to the degree that we're looking for?
Thank you, Mr. White.
Can I make a comment on that before you get Chief up here?
Okay.
I'm going to give you an example of the e-bikes. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm on. I'm going to give you an example of the e-bikes. On two separate occasions, I've had to call the police department. Well, one separate occasion, I had to call the police department because of a lost person. And they were at the house within 2 minutes. Today, a UPS driver made a delivery at my house, and a comment was made by a person in the house. And the UPS driver went to the police department, and the police department was there at my house in less than 3 minutes after the time my wife made that comment. So I don't know about any other services, but thank God for those bicycles in my family, because they were great. Everybody can find something to pick at until it happens to them. Always remember that. And it's happened to me, and I thank God Jeff Glazer made a decision to get those e-bikes.
And thank you, Mr. White. Chief, could you address some of the comments?
I appreciate the question.
Thank you, Chief.
No, I do. I appreciate the questions, because we should, obviously we're accountable for everything that we get. In terms of the golf cart, we took ownership of it in December, and then it took probably 3.5 weeks. We had to get the title, the tag, registration in order to make it street legal. And then I had to send it in to get the graphics and the lights put on it. So we didn't get it back until about the day before the Legends Parade. And that's when we previewed it. So we brought it to the Legends Parade. We had it out front. If you were at the Legends Parade, you would have seen it. It was in the middle of South Atlantic Boulevard. We had the lights on. People were walking around it. And then after the event was over, we were able to give courtesy rides to a lot of the visitors and a lot of our residents, especially some of our elderly residents, and they were very thankful. And we haven't done that at any other parade. I mean, we're not putting people in the back of patrol cars because they all have cages in them. So we put people on the golf cart, and we take them around, and it worked exactly the way that I thought it would for that event. So it worked out perfectly. We brought it back out for the Easter egg hunt. I don't know if Mr. White was at the Easter egg hunt, but we had it out for that. We're going to have it out next week at the Memorial Day event. And then on Memorial Day is when we start our boat ramp detail. And so we will have it every weekend out of the boat ramp detail. And then every event that comes up, our parades we'll have it at. We'll have it at the Halloween event, the Veterans Day event. We'll have it on the weekends for July 4th. So we're excited about it. The guys like it. I also have my investigator taking it out 2 to 3 hours a week if he's not working a case. So we're excited about it. We like it. We think it's a great tool to have in our toolbox. And then in terms of the e-bikes, you know, today is just another example of that. He was flagged down, Officer Walker, when he was on South Atlantic Boulevard. And so he was there, you know, at the time of the call, so an immediate response time. And we have four people out of our crew that are certified to ride the bike. Most of them are kind of gravitating towards the e-bike because they enjoy that better than the bicycle. But we get it out whenever we can. So I'm satisfied with both of those devices.
Thank you very much, Chief. Thank you. No, there are no others.
I could walk down there and do a citizens. I don't want to wait until at the end of the meeting. Can I do that? I have a comment to make. About, I was hoping Barbara Davis would be here because I know she would make a comment, but I don't think we should wait until citizens' comments on this one item.
Okay. And it's a comment for you individually as a person?
Well, it's actually a comment by me as an individual, but it's a comment for the town of Ponce Inlet. It's a concern of the person that passed away this past month, and their mother was honored the previous month, Edwina, tree being named after her. I can wait until the end. I was hoping Barbara would be here, but I can wait until the end.
She will not be here, so maybe it's best you say it during comments, unless you want to stand up. If he wants to stand up, give his name and address as a citizen.
Absolutely, that's fine.
Okay, thank you, Patrick. Okay.
Bill Milano, 4779 South Atlantic Avenue, Unit C1, Ponce Inlet. April 18th, something happened. I happened to catch it in the newspaper when I was going through the Fort Lauderdale News. We recognized Edwina here 2 months ago and named a tree after her because of the wonderful things that she has done and had done and continues to do in the city, in the town of Ponce Inlet. Sherry Utter, her daughter, passed away April 18th. I don't know if many people know Sherry. I was fortunate to know Sherry and Jim because they attended every planning board member meeting. They attended every board meeting, council meeting, you name it, they were there until Sherry got sick. She is a founding member of the Ponce Inlet Women's Club. She was a 50-year Ponce Inlet resident. She was the Citizens of the Year. She was the Grand Marshal of our Christmas parade. And I just wanted people to know that a part of our history has again passed away. And I don't think saying it under councilor comments, it needs to be a citizen's comment because we know the wonderful things that that family has done over the 50 years that they've lived here. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Item 6A, the Mayor's Proclamation Report. The following proclamation will be presented during the month of June 2025, a proclamation declaring the week of June 2nd to June 6th, 2025, as Code Enforcement Officers Appreciation Week. Copy of this proclamation may be viewed at the Town Hall kiosk. We are expecting our government affairs representative, Andrew Kellel of Sunrise Consulting Group, to provide us with his presentation on legislative updates. He is running a little late. When he comes, we will be able to have his presentation at that time, but he will be here. Item 7, the consent agenda. There are 3 items on the consent agenda. Does anyone wish to pull an item?
Nope.
Anyone in the audience wish to pull an item? Seeing none, I move to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. We have no items for item 8, old new business, item 9, public hearings, quasi-judicial matters, and no public hearings, non-quasi-judicial matters. We are up to 11A, ordinances, and this is a first reading, ordinance 2025, and Patrick, I would ask you to please read the ordinance by title only.
Ordinance 2025-03, an ordinance of the Town Council of the Town of Ponce Inlet, Volusia County, Florida, amending Chapter 78, Article 2, Division 2 of the Code of Ordinances to authorize the administrative resolution of customer billing disputes up to a certain maximum amount and to update the required inspection and testing period for backflow prevention devices to be consistent with the Florida Administrative Code, providing for conflicting ordinances, providing for codification, providing for severability, and providing an effective date.
Thank you, Patrick. Mike?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. This ordinance is a product of discussions at last month's meeting concerning 2 separate but related items. One has to do with the ability for the town to resolve utility billing disputes, and the other has to do with requirements for testing of backflow prevention devices. Both of the regulations for these are found in the chapter of the code concerning water utilities. So the first issue has to do with, you remember at last month's meeting, we had a resident come before us. He had asked for a refund, a partial refund on his utility bill. However, the leak occurred on private property, but he still accused the town of not providing good customer service. Unfortunately, by the time it made it to the council, significantly much more staff time had been spent. The value of that far exceeded the amount that he was actually requesting. So staff asked the council, would you give us the ability to handle these kinds of things? We had toyed with the idea of just putting something in the fee resolution. The more we thought about it, the more we felt the need that we should set up an actual process in the code, and then the actual amount will be handled separately in the fee resolution, which we'll bring forward to you at second reading. The other issue has to do with the requirement for testing of backflow prevention devices. These are devices that prevent the flow of water from going from like a fixture or something back into the water system, and they have to be tested periodically. The town and other communities have a requirement that these be tested 1 year, but that's not consistent with the state law, which allows, it says, at least biennially, which is every 2 years. There was some confusion inadvertently created when the town sent out a letter a year or so ago informing residents that they had to test their device every 2 years, and then there was something else that came up that said, well, they had to test it 1 year. So we're trying to resolve that by just simply making our requirement consistent with what's in state law. And this ordinance does both of those things. So if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer those.
Mike, I don't have any questions. I really want to thank you because we obviously found a void, and we now will have a process if this is approved, and I'm very appreciative of it. We're providing enhanced service. I'd like to see it that way for our residents. So thank you for this. Does anyone have any questions about the process, the ordinance, or how we're going to have this unfold? Oh, Joe, go ahead.
Just a quick question. Are we talking about a percentage of relief or a dollar amount that...
We had discussed... first of all, the ordinance does not mention a specific amount, but what we had discussed last month was not to exceed $300, something like that, a very minimal amount. And anything above that would come back to council. And that's typically what we see when people call us about questions with their bills. It's around in that range. It's not any more than that.
Okay. And thank you, Michael, for that, because that was one of my questions in here. Are we going to set amount that does not have to be in the ordinance? Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah, the fee resolution, it's much easier to adopt. It just takes one reading.
Gotcha.
And so our intent was to bring that next with the second reading to you. That'd be a resolution.
Okay. And also, too, in there, it said a deadline for request. Is that the exact same thing? We do not have to have that in the ordinance, because there was a question mark in there as far as a timeline of how long, how soon a resident should request a refund or request a review for an issue.
Yeah, that is in the ordinance, and we have suggested 60 days.
Okay.
And so that gives, that should give people enough time to see their bill and, you know, figure out what they're doing and or what they want to do and then get in touch with us. So if we can get that from 60 days from the date of the billing, then we will respond in writing, and then we'll proceed from there.
Okay, and then last question, and again, this is to make sure things are consistent. In here it says town manager or designee. I know I'm being a little bit picky here, but in my opinion, it should be a designee, because you have way too much on your plate, in my opinion. Is that giving us a leeway in case the designee is not there? But also, too, the question is being consistent.
Yeah, you see that throughout the code. Town manager is me. I mean, I'm in charge of staff, so I can designate whoever I want, essentially, you know, very broadly. I would see this normally working is that this would be handled by your utility billing staff. They're the ones who would first try to resolve any dispute with a customer. And they, like in the case of last month, they would only bring it to me if they had tried their best and they couldn't resolve it. So if they can handle it at their level, that's ideal from a cost efficiency standpoint and a time standpoint. So I would designate them to handle that if they could.
Okay. And the last question I have, and thank you for the backflow valve, I'll say cleanup, because I've been receiving, even Friday night, believe it or not, at dinner, I had a resident come up and ask me, and I kind of smiled and said, well, look at the agenda for the council meeting. It's on there. And they're not here. Shame on them. But thank you for it. The question I have is, a resident gets a certificate, and I guess we have a company that tracks this, so we'll notify the company, and so now the certificate potential will say you're good for 2 years.
Yes.
Okay. I'm good. Thank you.
Thank you, Skip. Joe, you had another.
In reference to what is commonly referred to as a snowbird leaving their property for the summer months, and let's say the water line between the meter and the house deteriorates. They probably wouldn't know about it until they got the second or third bill, which could be 60, 90, or 120 days. Is that the negotiable?
Well, our practice is that we look at those bills. If we notice that someone has a much higher than normal bill, we attempt to contact them.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what what got the rewards into their situation, is that we had dialed the wrong number. You know, but that's something that we always try to do. So no matter where they are, if they leave us their correct contact information, we will make an attempt to reach them.
Okay.
And I can attest to that part.
Yeah.
Because 1 month we got a call.
Bill,
they had
I'm
just
so sorry
they had the just mind. Read the meter, and we had used 112,000 gallons of water. So
yeah, well,
they were wonderful. I think I said it at the last meeting. The town was absolutely wonderful in how they handled it.
Well, I'm thinking about when I was president of Seagull Landing, and we had that incident happen. And
Bill, do you have any questions on it? No. Gary, no. Does anyone in the audience have any questions or wish to comment on this agenda item? Okay. Well, seeing none, then I will accept a motion.
I got it.
Okay.
I make a motion to approve the proposed ordinance 2025-03, authorizing the administrative resolution of customer building disputes and updating cross-connection control regulations.
On first reading.
Pardon me?
On first reading.
On first reading. I was going to say that.
Oh, good. Sorry. We have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Skip. A motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Milano?
Yes.
Councilmember White?
Yes.
Mayor Peritsky?
Yes.
Councilmember Villanella?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Smith?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you, Mike, for working on this, because this was something that was needed. Thank you. Okay, no old business. Now we're at 13 new business. 13A, the interlocal agreement between the town of Volusia County for storm debris management on South Atlantic Avenue. Chief Scales.
Good afternoon, Mayor, members of council. What you have before you today is an agreement that we have worked out with Volusia County that will allow us during hurricane and named storms to perform debris pickup at the same time we do the rest of the town. Atlantic Avenue is a county road, and they are responsible for debris pickup. And if we did it on our own, out of the goodness of our heart, we could not get reimbursed from FEMA for that debris pickup. And basically what this agreement does is it provides that accommodation for us. A lot of times we're picking our debris up before the county is, because they're rolling us into the rest of their process, and they may not get to us as quickly as we need them to. And it's really a public safety and a public service measure. I will be honest with you, there could be a little bit of cost, because FEMA does not reimburse 100% of debris pickup, but we feel that cost is worth it to expedite the pickup and just make the conditions better for our residents. And with that, I'm open for any questions.
Chief, thank you, because I was trying to find the downside of this. It looked like a good idea. It sounds like a good idea. And I do think it's something that will benefit all the residents after the storm. So thank you for that. And, yeah, there is the issue of the FEMA reimbursement. I guess we'll know perhaps after our first experience with that. But thank you.
If it's still
any questions
if
here?
It's still in existence.
What was that, Bill?
If FEMA is still in existence.
Yeah, that's a whole other kettle of fish, yes. Joe?
So, Dan, does this give us the ability to get reimbursed from FEMA because we have the agreement with the county?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Go ahead, Skip.
Yeah. And again, I have a few questions. I know you're surprised. But I agree with the benefits. I think it's really good. And yes, we probably do pick up more than our share even before this agreement. I watch us do it all the time. But my concerns are, number one, did Volusia County come to us with this, or did we go to Volusia County?
Actually, we went to them.
Okay. Because of trying to speed up the process for our residents. Okay.
Yes.
That answers that one. The big concerns are man hours. We're tight at Public Works right now anyway. So do you foresee this adding to additional headcount for Public Works if we continue to go through the storms that we have in the past?
That's a great question, and the answer is no, because we take all the debris pickup and we farm that out to a third party.
But we contract. Have to get it off the street, though, right?
No. And let me qualify that. We may assist to facilitate that, but we don't see this being any additional need for staffing. No, I don't think that's going to be an impact.
So all we'll be doing is pushing it off to the easement, off the sidewalks or wherever.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. What about the Beach Street ramp? Because they consider that a street, and it's a ramp. And I've had many discussions with them about that. So during the storm, after storm, all the debris seems to come up Beach Street ramp and out in the middle of the intersection. We do push it back to the ramp, and that's as far as we take it. So will this obligate us to clear the boardwalks, all the debris, the material that comes through there?
All we would do is gain access like we have in the past and put it in a certain place so that it could be picked up. But we wouldn't.
Okay. All right. Let me rephrase that question then. Because what we've done in the past and what I've witnessed them doing is we take it and we push it to the front. We push it to the west side of the gate next to the monument.
Yeah.
Great place to say. Is that where our obligation stops? Because they come in, and here's why I'm saying this. I've been working with Jessica about calling the plug in the hole. You guys know we have discussed plug in the hole, which I think we still should do. her concern was, well, if you plug the hole, you know, we have to have the ramp open up the very next day, which I think is crazy because of a storm. But they normally do come out there and they start moving things. Is it going to be our responsibility to clear that ramp for cars to be able to drive on the beach if they say day one or day two after a storm?
That was not part of this agreement. We're strictly dealing with Atlantic Avenue.
Okay.
But to your point, I can get clarification from Jessica and from Public Works, but my understanding is it's just Atlantic Avenue.
Right. Okay. Well, if we need to get clarification, in my opinion, on that, because that is a massive, massive undertaking right there sometimes.
Sure.
The other concern I have, and you've touched on it, is that there could be, might be, additional cost. And in here it says we have significant disaster reserve funds, which I don't think we ever totally funded, but that was the writing, so that really perked my attention when I saw that. But there is going to be a cost. Can we not, what is our guarantee from FEMA? Because we just now received our last check for $122,119.40 per Michael's report. That was from Milton. So we sat on that money for waiting for that those funds for this amount of period of time. It lets the county off the hook. They have no money invested. We have clear roads. And so I guess my struggle is I see both sides of this. And I have put a lot of thought into this, and I probably shouldn't have had to, but I have because it's a benefit, but then it could also put additional burden on our tax base. And if FEMA, we can't predict what's going to happen with FEMA. And they're already looking, it was in today's paper, yesterday's paper, that some of the programs that had already been approved potentially are going to be unapproved. So it's the fear factor, Dan, and I think it's a great idea, but then on this side, I'm not so sure. If we were guaranteed to get our funds, if the county would say, hey, FEMA doesn't pay you, we will, brother, I'm all in.
Yeah, that we don't have.
But could we ask? Because we're taking responsibility away from them. We're taking workload away from the county. Yes, it's helping our residents. But it's just like Wilbur. If they don't take care of Wilbur, it doesn't matter anyway. Remember the roof that came off the house?
Yeah.
So is there any other municipality that's going to be working with the county doing the same thing?
I don't have that answer.
Okay.
But I can find out for you. I can.
Okay. Well,
let me make a statement, I guess. What I understood, what I heard, and what I read is we are not obligated to do anything. This allows us to go to FEMA if we do something. Is that?
Now, this agreement says we're going to take responsibility.
We are taking responsibility to get it cleaned.
Yes.
Okay, which is then a service to all of the people that have to drive it, and we'll do it faster than the county has ever done it. That's okay. That's the purpose.
So, if I may, Skip, what you're saying is that you have two issues with this that may make you hesitate feeling comfortable moving forward today, if I understand this correctly, right? The first one is you need a clarification regarding the beach ramp. That's the first thing. The second thing is that in the event, well, if there's no FEMA, that's something else. But, if there's no FEMA, does this agreement still hold?
I guess that's your question. Yes,
and if there is no FEMA, will the county reimburse us?
Correct.
Because we are taking on a responsibility of the county. Those are your two points.
Yes. And yes, ma'am. And the last point, though, Mayor, if I can. Again, if they do not clear Wilbur, it's not going to help anyway. Like, again, with the roof that sat out there for almost a week, and I can tell you this man right here was getting ready to get on a dozer and go down to get it himself because I had a conversation with him about it. He said, Skip, I'm over it. And thank you for that, Dan. So we can do all this stuff, but South Atlantic would not be fully flowing if they don't take care of Wilbur anyway.
Do you have a suggestion of what you would like to do right now with respect to this agreement, the way it's drafted?
The way it's drafted, I do not like it, because I would rather have the answers to the Beach Street, and I'd also like to have an answer if FEMA does not agree to pay us, that we can be reimbursed by the county because we're doing the work for them. And that would, in my opinion, make the residents happy, because we're paying county taxes anyway.
How time sensitive is this agreement? Was there, were we under any obligation to respond within a particular time, Dan?
No.
Okay.
No.
Are Skip's questions the type that you feel comfortable to go back and speak
absolutely.
With them about it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Is everybody in agreement that maybe that's what
Well, those are some of the things I wrote down, because the FEMA reimbursement, because of what's going on, we have no idea. So my concern was the county. My other concern was when we say South Atlantic, it stops at Beach Street, because we'll still be responsible from South Atlantic to the park.
Correct.
Okay.
Okay. Gary?
No, not fine.
Anyone in the audience have anything they wish to say? Chief, we would appreciate it if you go back and obtain clarification, and maybe we could be provided with that when you have the answer. Okay?
Absolutely. Yep,
we
no
appreciate
problem.
Your time on it. Thank you so much. We're trying to help the residents, but at the same time, we don't want to make other problems. So thank you.
No problem. And Dan, again, can I say one last time, Mayor? It's a wonderful idea. If we can get those two pieces handled, brother, I'm right there with you. I think it's good.
I appreciate the input. I think those are valid questions. I have no problem getting the answers for you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, excuse me, Mayor.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I guess the right thing to do would be to table this item.
Do we need to make a motion to table the item until?
By group.
Okay.
By
and do I have to give a date certain?
No.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's not an ordinance, so the notice provisions, if you table it, it's fine. You can bring it back off the table by posting it on the agenda when it's ready to come back, if it comes back.
Okay, thank you so much. So I move to table agenda item 13A.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. 13A is tabled. Thank you, Patrick. Thank you, Mike. We are now at 13B. Award of continuing professional service contracts for architectural services. Mike or Director
Wargo? Mr. Wargo is going to handle this one.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Council. I'm bringing this before the Council so that we get in an agreement with architectural services like we have with engineering services. We have several agreements with engineering services to help us do engineering on different projects. But without the architectural services, then for each project we come up with, then it's got to go out. We've got to do the bid process, or not really bid, but qualification projects for each project we come up with. So moving forward with these contracts and these four architectural firms, I did vet them. I did go through. I talked to certain projects in certain cities that they've done work for. All four of them come well, highly recommended, and they each have their own niche for projects that we could have coming up, you know, for the town. So we did do what they call a CCNA, which is a state law for picking architects and engineers, which means we don't go by price. We go by strictly by their qualifications, their work history, and everything they've done in the past. And so reading through, as you can see, your packets are pretty thick. And so we got a lot of information. And so therefore, we decided to go with all four of them, because all four of them have, each one has their own little niche on what we could get done. So this will help us on building B, for example, me getting an architectural firm set up to help design Building B for future use. Also, any renovation projects we need coming forward, any new buildings we need coming forward, to circumvent having to go out and do extra work to try and do this qualification for each project. So we'd like to get this approved by everybody so that, you know, it'll help us get things done faster in the future.
Well, thank you so much, because I see that it will help. So we have uninterrupted services. It provides us with options as necessary without us scrambling. Does anyone have any questions of, yes, Joe?
So in essence, this eliminates the need to an RFP?
Yes.
Gary?
Yeah. Well, question. When you implement one, do you get quotes from more than one of these architects, or do you have a limit where you can just approve it and move forward, or does any of that have to come back to the council?
So what the process is, after you guys agree to this and allow me to move forward, what I will be doing is I will be requesting from each of the architects a schedule of values of what each one will cost me, so that I will be able to look at and say, okay, well, this architect, he specializes in this. It's going to cost this much for the architect. It's going to cost this much for, you know, the CAD operator. It's going to cost, so I'll have an idea of what they will cost, and yes, I can then move forward with maybe two out of the four and say, hey, could you give me a price, what it's going to cost for this one, and have two of them give me quotes just based off of their fee schedules. Okay,
but you get to make that decision.
Yes.
That's perfect, because that is expedient and it works, and we move forward without all the nonsense that usually takes place.
Yes, sir.
Okay, Gary. Anyone else? Anyone in the audience have any questions on this?
Mayor?
Yes.
If I could, just for a minute, to add some clarity and support of what staff is saying. So there was the RFQ that went out. We got, and so under the CCNA, which is it's kind of a, all governments face this. You all have faced it before. When you get the responses back from the four firms, there's no pricing, there's no sheet, there's no hourly rates, the things you think. Because that happens, what staff is asking you to do tonight is approve an award of the RFQ to these four firms. Then it goes back, staff requests pricing, we prepare a contract for each firm, which gives flexibility in terms of future projects over the term of the contract. It doesn't identify any. It's these are the options you can choose from. Then that contract will then come back to you all for approval. So what the contract with the firm. So that's the process.
The process. Thank you. Thank you for expanding upon that. Does anyone have any questions based upon what our attorney just said? Anyone in the audience?
If I can add to Mayor, this just to confirm, we did put out an RFQ to solicit bids for this process. So once the firms are under contract, then to supplement further with the way it works, if there is a particular task or certain item, then that follows our standard purchasing procedures. So the council would then see that if anything goes over that purchasing threshold. If it's a minor item, you wouldn't see that, but then it just follows our regular purchasing standards.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Any questions?
Nope.
Any questions of the audience? Okay. And thank you for all of the additional clarifications. We'll take a motion to approve.
I'll make a
or
motion.
Not approve.
Okay. Make a motion to approve the continuing professional services contract and authorization to execute the contracts with the four qualified firms identified through the town's recent solicitation process.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes.
Thank you so much for your support.
Thank you. We appreciate your work. Thank you. 13C, we have the National League of Cities Service Line Warranty Agreement with Home Service. Mike?
Before we did that, I wanted to mention Mr. Kalel is here. If you'd like to bring him up for his presentation, or can wait.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much. Yes, we have our presentation, Andrew Kalel. Thank you so much. Well, hello, and here's your PowerPoint. Okay.
Good afternoon, Mayor and members of council. Good to see you all of y'all. And as always, I truly appreciate you letting me represent you and putting your trust in me, letting me represent you. I was going to say, Mr. Town Manager, no rush, but I appreciate you bringing me up here. So this is a 2025 legislative session almost presentation. We're like 97% of the way there, depending on how you look at it. And what I'm going to do in this presentation is I'm going to go through this. I'm going to try to go quickly. Anything that you see in this presentation that you want to ask me questions, I'm going to go through this quickly, somewhat hold your questions, bring them up to me at the end, and I just want to caution you as your advisor, let's stick questions with technical questions since the legislature is still in Tallahassee. I'll get into that. Is this working? Just go to the next one. Perfect. All right. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to talk about session generally. I'm going to talk about impactful bills that passed. A lot of these bills, I know the mayor and town manager sends out and the League of Cities send out a lot of updates. So you probably have seen these numbers and heard about these policy proposals. I'm going to go through impactful bills that passed. I'm going to go through some less impactful bills that passed. Probably not going to hit everything on my notes here because I realize that might take an hour. I'm going to actually go over some impactful bills that did not pass because I've learned that impactful bills that did not pass are three-fourths of importance of bills that did pass. I'm going to talk about the budget, and I'm going to talk about the property tax conversation a little bit. Next slide. So this year, as you've all seen in the papers, the legislative session is not over. The chambers have extended the legislative session. I wish it was over. I'm fixing to go on vacation, but they don't plan around me. It's not over. They've extended for the purposes of a few things, passing the budget and the corresponding bills that go with the budget, which includes the tax package and various implementing bills. And then they've also left one particular piece of policy that really relates to rural communities on the table to be considered through the extension of session. The House has extended session through the end of June. Remember, the state fiscal year ends June 30th. And the Senate has only extended their session through like June 3rd. I'm not sure how that's going to play out yet. I have a feeling that the Senate will end up ultimately either extending or the House will have to concede and work and try to get something done by the Senate's expiration time. As far as the question of what happens if we don't pass a state budget by July 1st, we're not Washington, D.C. I don't think we're going to go into furloughs. I think in my research there's only been like one time that the legislature has not passed a budget or almost not done it on the time, and it was in 92. So we don't have a lot of historical reference on how this is going to play out if they don't. But there's not one person in Tallahassee that wants to deal with not passing a budget. So I believe they will get it done. This session, they passed 20% less bills. And as far as bills that impact local governments, the ones that are out there are very sharp and very impactful. But overall, 20% less policy bills made it through the legislature. They did a lot less work in committees this year. They just did a lot of presentations. They didn't hear bills. It was very slow getting going. And I think it's also the reason they passed less bills is there's obviously some conflicting priorities between the chambers. The Senate really wanted to work on rural revitalization. The House had their priorities, tax cuts and various things. So there wasn't any kumbaya at the beginning of the leadership talks. What are we going to pass? What are we going to let get through? And they had still trying to work out those wrinkles. Some major policy issues that did go through. Tax reform overall, at least they've started that. That's a major policy issue. Wrongful death reform was a big deal. It seemed to be more for the House. If you have a child who's over a certain age and there's medical negligence, you lose your ability to sue because they're an adult and they're not married. And so the House wanted to reform that so that people are able to file medical negligence suits if a child passes away, but they're an adult child. Hemp was an issue that the legislature tackled. They didn't finish it, but they started having some serious hemp conversations. Condo reform, which I know is important for the town of Ponce Inlet. Like I said, rural communities, ballot initiatives. They made some significant changes to how you put things on the ballot. Something that I just thought was interesting, the crime of using a tracking device. They made it a crime to use like an Apple AirTag tracking somebody to commit a crime. And I just saw that and I was like, that's of interest. And then, of course, renaming the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. Next slide. Significant bills that did pass. Senate Bill 1080, that's this year's, one of this year's two land development bills. This does some decreases the shot clocks and says that you can use your building permit fees on expenses to get a land development order, or your land development fees, you can use those expenses for any services that you need to essentially get the land development order development authorization done faster. So they expanded what you can spend the funds on there. And then they, like I said, decreased shot clocks. This bill, this year's land development bill, and there's another one related to platting. This bill was the one that, as it failed on the Senate floor, and we haven't had a piece of legislation fail on either chamber floors in a long time. And I think that was because they tried to include some language about agricultural enclaves, and you may have seen something related to that. And I don't know if Ponce Inlet has a lot of agricultural. They don't. But that was in that piece of legislation, and they were counting votes as the bill was coming up to the floor, counting votes. They went to do the roll, the vote. Everybody voted, and the Senate president goes, shows the bill failed, and they were not expecting that, and the bill failed on the floor. They had to amend that agriculture enclave language out, you know, recount votes and bring it back, and then they ultimately passed it. Live Local 3.0, that passed. That provides an attorney's fee statute for anybody who files action against a local government relating to a Live Local matter. If I have a Live Local project and I get into litigation, there's attorney's fees that I can be awarded. And it extends some Live Local provisions to religious facilities and properties adjacent to religious facilities. In that bill, they were considering allowing Live Local provisions at one point on golf courses and other recreational pieces of land, and that ultimately ended up coming out. But that was something that we were dealing with during session. The next bill, Senate Bill 180, this is the emergency management bill. And I know the town manager made a comment to me last week that this would be something of concern to the council. I'm prepared to speak more thoroughly, but just in general, that bill makes a lot of changes. But some of the most impactful changes that I think potentially for you out of that bill is the 100-mile radius piece. So if a storm comes through and the county is partially or completely within 100 miles of the track of the storm, then the county and all cities in the county are unable to make any changes to their comprehensive plan or land development policies that are more restrictive than the current status quo for 1 year after the storm passes through. So that passed. There's some other things in that bill where the town will be required to inventory its emergency equipment, generators, high water rescue vehicles, water assets, provide that information to DEM annually, because according to the bill sponsor, what has happened is a storm comes through and we don't know what the town actually has, and we just went out and bought 7 more generators and we didn't know that they didn't know that they had 10 sitting in storage. So there will be a requirement to inventory response equipment, provide that to FDEM, and also to provide a point of contact to FDEM for the town. Now, you would think that would probably already be out there, but apparently FDEM has run into some issues where a storm comes through or a tornado comes through and they don't know who to call in the city. So that's probably not a Ponce Inlet issue, but perhaps some very small towns that have 300 people haven't communicated that. So that's in that bill. Something I want to point out in Senate Bill 180, you'll see in the middle there I have Senate Bill 810. That was a bill that came out of a disaster. Pasco County, a state senator's neighborhood flooded, and he had proposed a bill that ultimately did not end up passing, but this would impact the town. It didn't pass, but what this bill did was it would require you to inspect all stormwater-related infrastructure, like, I can't remember the frequency, every couple of years, and then report the condition of your stormwater-related infrastructure, which could be a culvert, could be a retention pond. I mean, this is a very long list of stormwater-related infrastructure. Report that to DEP, and report that to DEM annually about the condition of your stormwater-related infrastructure. That did not pass, but I do anticipate that coming around. Some other bills that did pass, I know Ponce Inlet doesn't handle their water, but defluoridization, no fluoride in the water, that passed through the agricultural bill. There's some preemptions for synthetic turf. So Ponce Inlet, obviously, we have a lot of single-family homes and condos, but single-family homes, the use and installation of synthetic turf, AstroTurf, on single-family residences is preempted to the state. The gentleman that just spoke before me was talking about some contractors and CCNA. There was another thing that passed where any change orders in your projects have to be paid within a certain amount of time, a prompt payment act, if you will, for change orders, and that passed as well. Other things like